You've heard our open themes with listeners talking about their vocations.
Missouri dairy farmers, love issues, etc.
And what they're doing while listening to issues, etc.
This is Mark from Michigan, and I am a lawnmower listener. We love issues, etc.
We're looking for more of these elements to include in our open themes. Tell us about your vocation, hobby, or what you do while listening to Issues Etc. Call the Issues Etc. comment line 24/7 at 618-223-8382. If you make a mistake, just start over. 618-223-8382. Thanks for listening, and thanks for contributing to Issues Etc. 618-223-8382.
Every time we kill a child through abortion, we kill our potential. Every time we kill a child, we, all of us, suffer. We lose a little of ourselves and a whole lot of our future.
Congresswoman Maya Love speaking last Friday at the 44th annual March for Life, well attended, and this year better covered by the media. A big contrast, I think, some are seeing between the 44th annual March for Life and another DC march that took place a couple days earlier, the Women's March there, both of them not only in Washington, DC, but around the country. The March for Life was attended by one of our regular guests, Bree Payton. We'll be talking with her about her attendance, what she saw there, what stood out to her at this latest March for Life in Washington, D.C. Welcome back to Issues Etc., coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. After our conversation with Bree, we're going to turn to the subject of Christian marriage. Dr. Christopher Mitchell will join us. He's authored a chapter in the book Ethics of Sex. His chapter is titled, What is Marriage? A basic question, but it has a very, very deep and rich biblical answer. We'll get into all of that a little later in this hour of Issues, Etc. Bree Payton is a regular guest. She attended the 44th Annual March for Life. She's culture and millennial politics reporter for The Federalist. Bree, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Thanks so much for having me.
You were at the march, and you're a millennial. The kind of typical story is that millennials are more pro-life than their parents' generation. Is that true?
Yes. Yeah, they definitely are. Millennials are, for the most part, much more pro-life than any other generation since Roe v. Wade. And that trend seems to be continuing in that direction.
What stood out most to you in your attendance at the 44th Annual March for Life?
Sure. I think I was really impressed by the crowd size. I think there were easily, you could say, 500,000 people there at the march, or close to that number. I, as someone who went to both the Women's March the weekend earlier and the March for Life, I think that the attendance in the crowd at the March for Life was much larger than at the Women's March. And I was also struck by just the kind of people and the kind of rhetoric and the tone surrounding both of those marches. A lot of the individuals that attended the March for Life were families or nuns and priests and of that nature. And a lot of the speakers concluded their remarks with God bless America. And there was lots of praying, and even nuns were praying the rosary as we walked along the march route. The weekend before, the march was extremely vulgar, and there were a lot of women who were dressed up in outfits that resembled genitals, you know, or would hold up really explicit signs with cursing and all kinds of sexual innuendos. So I was just struck by the difference in tone and the kind of person that were attending both of the marches.
Which speakers at the March for Life stood out the most to you?
I think Mia Love's speech, in which she describes the situation that her own parents were in when they found out that they were pregnant with her and contemplated abortion, but ultimately decided to end up keeping her. And now she's the first female Black Republican congresswoman to ever be elected. you know, I think that her story is very powerful and unique and really goes to show you that when a woman aborts a child, you really don't know how the child is going to, you know, grow up and who they're going to become. And the overall message or takeaway point from her speech is that abortion limits humanity of potential, right? Not just the potential of that baby to develop and be born and grow up and become, you know, an adult, but also humanity's potential in getting great people to help with societal ills.
We spoke recently with Glenn Stanton of Focus on the Family, a correspondent with you for The Federalist, and he mentioned being at the march and hanging out with a group called Lesbians for Life. He noted the diversity of the different life groups. What were your thoughts there?
Yeah, definitely. Well, the March for Life prides itself in attracting a lot of different kinds of people in their cause for life, right? Life and being pro-life is a very big tent movement or organization. You know, we're all fighting to save the lives of the unborn and to stick up for those who can't speak up for themselves, right? And a lot of people are going to be doing that. It's not just the nuns that I described earlier, but as you stated, are also lesbians.
The vice president spoke there. What do you make of his address?
Sure. Well, I thought, you know, overall it was pretty positive. I didn't really take away that much from his remarks. They were kind of just general remarks, but I think that his presence made a bigger impact than anything that he said. I think that him being there with President Trump's support and with Kellyanne Conway also going, I think really shows that we're going to have a pro-life ally in the White House. And I do think that it is indicative that President Trump, when he does name a Supreme Court pick to replace the late Antonin Scalia, I think he will be sticking to his promise and picking a pro-life justice who will stand up for the unborn.
You had mentioned Maya Love. Talk a little bit more about her address. She told her story that you described there. What kind of impact did it seem to have?
Well, it brought a lot of people to tears, right? This is someone who was very close to death in utero by abortion, and she managed to escape it and survive. And she talked a lot about how her story is rather unique when you kind of zoom out and look at the scheme of things. You know, African Americans account for, I'm saying this off the top of my head, but it's a little bit less than 15% of the overall United States population, yet they account for almost 70% or close to 70% of all abortions in recent years, right? So obviously there's a very huge disparity in what kinds of babies are getting aborted and which ones are being killed in the womb. And I think that her speech was very powerful in the sense that she was highlighting the very real problem that Planned Parenthood and the abortion industry in general are targeting unborn Black lives.
How much was Planned Parenthood kind of the subtext of on the minds of the marchers?
Sure. Well, there's a lot of talk. Well, there are a lot of signs that said defund Planned Parenthood, right? So that's a pretty specific rallying cry for something that they want done to that organization. But also, although I don't remember any of the speakers mentioning Planned Parenthood by name, they did say that we need to pass laws and make sure that no taxpayer funds are funding abortions. Now, right now, we have the Hyde Amendment in place, which says currently that no taxpayer dollars can be used to fund abortions. However, Obama recently signed an executive order on his way out the door, which bars states from blocking tax dollars to go towards clinics that also provide abortion services. So basically, that executive order says, hey, states, you don't have the power to decide whether or not you're going to fund entities like Planned Parenthood or not. Like it or not, your taxpayer dollars are going to have to fund Planned Parenthood and other clinics that offer abortion services. And so a lot of pro-abortionists claim that Planned Parenthood doesn't use those taxpayer dollars to fund abortions, that they're just using it to offer STD screenings and the like. But we all know that that's a lie and that funds are fungible and that once an entity gets hand on taxpayer dollars, we can't control or even figure out really how they're spending it. And I think the fact that Planned Parenthood accounts for almost 30% of all of the abortions provided last year, yet only provided less than 2% of pap tests and I think less than 1.5% 6% of breast exams, I think shows that they specialize in abortion, and that's the primary goal of their organization.
So much of the visual impact for those of us watching the march and the little coverage that it got were in the signs that were being carried. What kind of signs did you see?
Right. So I saw some signs decrying CNN and other mainstream outlets as being, you know, fake news. Although I will have to say that the march did get a lot more coverage this year than it has in any other year, right? Politico, Washington Post, even the New York Times were kind of forced to cover this story and forced to talk about it because Donald Trump called them out in the ABC interview, you know, the day before the March for Life, saying, hey, you guys aren't covering this. Like, what are you doing? You're focusing on dumb things that don't matter, yet you ignore this giant march. Unfortunately, however, I did see in Politico's headline and the Washington Post headline of the story that they described the march as being, quote, thousands of people, when in reality, it was much more than thousands. It was hundreds of thousands, if not half a million or close to that, if not more.
What kind of, or did you see any kind of counter protests there at the march?
Sure. So there were some Planned Parenthood advocates and abortion advocates that were protesting the march near the Supreme Court. There weren't a lot of them, however. And to be honest with you, I didn't really see any of them, as I marched almost up to the Supreme Court, but not totally the whole way. So I didn't even see any. I just saw pictures of other people who saw them on Twitter.
The tenor, you mentioned before the contrast between the tenor of the Women's March and the March for Life. How would you describe that?
Right, exactly. Well, as I stated earlier, there was just a lot of vulgarity. And a lot of the narrative about the Women's March, which was supposed to be this inclusive movement, really was just centered on reproductive organs and abortion rights and the like. And a lot of women, you know, just blatantly screaming that they need to have access to abortion and stuff like that. And I would say that the tenor or tone of the March for Life differed in that it was very family oriented. A lot of the people at the March for Life looked like normal people that you would see, you know, just in normal life. And when I say normal, I mean that they weren't wearing, you know, crazy pussy hats or carrying crazy expletive signs or doing crazy things of that nature. These were just like normal family. Also, there I was struck at the spiritual contrast between the two, in that the March for Life was overall very positive. God was mentioned a lot. There was a lot of praying, whereas the Women's March was really angry in nature, and the tone and the overall tenor of it was really depressive.
Having attended both, is it fair to say that the Women's March turned out to be, regardless of the organizer's intent, essentially a pro-abortion march?
Yeah, I would say that that's accurate. I mean, the organizers excluded a pro-life group from being able to sponsor the event. Several of the organizers specifically said, oh, pro-life women shouldn't even bother showing up. You know, so they tried to mask themselves as this inclusive movement, when in reality, it was really quite obvious that it was really all just about abortion and centered around that idea.
Talk about the groups of former abortion clinic workers that you saw.
Yeah, so I saw at least two women who used to work in abortion clinics or Planned Parenthood facilities and said that they decided to leave and attributed that decision to Abby Johnson's And Then There Were None organization, which helped them escape the abortion industry. One woman said that she had always been pro-life her whole entire life, but had to work in an abortion clinic for financial reasons, but that And Then There Were None helped her find another job where she didn't have to do that every day. Another woman said that she managed a Planned Parenthood facility in North Carolina, but that one day she saw a fetus moving and realized that, hey, this is in fact a baby and I can't keep doing this anymore. Someone from that organization slipped her a card with information about the organization. She got in touch with them and was able to get out and find another job.
Finally, we started out talking with you about your attendance as a millennial. So why did you go, other than to cover, but why did you go as a woman and as a millennial? And what would you say to fellow millennials about the goal for something like the March for Life now that we're approaching 45 years of legalized abortion?
Sure, right. Well, I think that it's pretty clear, scientifically speaking, that life begins at conception. And I think that our government, specifically, you know, the founding documents that our country is built on, makes it explicitly clear that the government's role is to protect the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And I think that really this the whole abortion debate comes down to what people think in regards to what the role of the government is or what the purpose of government is. I think that the purpose of government is to protect those three things. And so therefore, I think that we should be fighting against abortion and should be sticking up for the unborn, because I think everyone deserves the right to be born and the right to live.
Bree Payton is culture and millennial politics reporter for The Federalist. You'll find a link to her columns at issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Bree, thank you again.
Thanks so much for your time.
Dr. Christopher Mitchell of Concordia Publishing House and author of a chapter in the book Ethics of Sex titled What is Marriage? Will join us to talk about a biblical perspective on marriage right after this.
Are you tired of working out at big box gyms? You'll find quality personal training and qualified instruction at Performance Fitness in Edwardsville. You can even work out for a full 30 days before making a commitment to join. Find out more at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. Performancefitness618.com.
Male and female sex differences, contraception, transgenderism. These are some of the topics covered in the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January, Ethics of Sex, From Taboo to Delight. You can find out more at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. Ethics of Sex contributors include Issues Etc. guests Ben Mays, Tom Eckstein, and Richard Stuckwish. Ethics of Sex, The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Metro East Lutheran High School in Edwardsville, Illinois, engages young adults in a Christ-centered environment, delivering academic excellence and spiritual growth to develop Christian leaders for tomorrow. We provide a Christ-focused alternative to public high schools. Many of our students receive tuition assistance. To help us provide tuition assistance to more students, go to MELHS.org and click on the giving page, or call me, Dr. J. Krause, principal, at
618-656-0043.
Listen to the best of the church's music for the Epiphany season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Epiphany season, 24/7. LutheranPublicRadio.org.